Children, we're starting.
That's right.
Another Fresh Picked Pod from audiotou.com. Shutters Inc. with Shelton Muller.
Like which to stay on and listen.
Hi, and welcome to a very belated episode 111 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from audiotou.com. And with me on the line, once again from Melbourne via Skype, Mr. Shelton Muller. How are you?
Where the hell have you been?
That's been a bit like that, hasn't it?
I'm well, mate. I'm really well.
Excellent. But,
yeah, nice to hear you're the dulcet tones of Bruce Williams, narrator extraordinaire, interviewer extraordinaire, et cetera, et cetera. I have missed you, mate.
Mate, it's very busy. Though. Yeah, I've missed recording the podcast as well. I've still been doing sign language and building the pod as time has allowed, but I've certainly missed doing Shutters Inc.
Yeah. Well, me too, mate. And I know that the natives are restless, so it's nice
absolutely, absolutely.
Nice to be back. And you're still busy with your recording work and all that kind of
thing? With the Australian Radio Network, yeah. So I'm basically there 5 days a week and, yeah, having a great time. So
good to hear. Good
yeah.
To hear.
And you? You busy?
Mate, yeah, very, very busy. You know, still getting this issue of Total Image, trying to get that
right.
Out, of course.
Yep.
Working at 5 Minute Photographer,
yep.
doing my photography, doing all the things that, you know, the many hats that I wear. Yeah. I wear more hats, I reckon. I wear more hats than a Tasmanian milliner's convention, you know?
Only our Australian listeners are going to get that. Which is probably a good thing.
I think we just alienated any Tasmanian listener.
Yeah.
And of course you get twice the value down there. So, but you know, yeah, I have been very, very busy, which is a good thing. My workshops have been very popular.
Right.
It's been nice to have you know, some Shutters Inc. listeners actually coming to the workshops. It's nice.
Excellent.
To some cases, I mean, I know some of them already,
yep.
But you know, from even before we started recording this podcast two and a half years ago. But yeah, I mean, it's been that long. But nice to see some turn up that I only know by name from email or from, you know, whatever level of correspondence we receive.
Yep.
And then they turn up at a workshop, you know.
Yep.
And there are plans afoot to work through the United States doing some workshops. I'll keep, if that does come to fruition, yep. If that does come to fruition, I'll certainly let you know. But there are things in the planning with some contacts over there.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's been very busy and, you know, it's been terrific.
Fantastic.
I think probably the least thing that I've been doing is actually taking pictures, which makes me feel rather guilty. You know, that's the life of a photographer, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. So shall we get through some? We've had a couple of emails. Should we get through?
Yeah, please.
A couple of,
go for
what
it.
What do you think?
Go
All
for
right.
it.
Let me just. There's some lovely work here from Carl, who sent an email to you.
Yep.
You forwarded it to me. Hey, Bruce and Shelton, just shot my first wedding with my shiny new D300. Thought I'd send you a shot. It's a beautiful shot.
Mm.
It really is.
Absolutely.
Isn't it? Gorgeous shot.
Yep.
When I bought the D300, it's straight out of the camera, of course, he says, apart from converting it to JPEG and putting a pretty frame on it. But if that's straight out of the camera, then boy, wow, that's boy. Beautifully shot. And if, you know, if that's what the camera's producing straight out, and it looks like it too, the dynamic range and everything in that is just gorgeous.
Yeah.
Really beautiful shot. He says, when I bought the D300, which has now relegated my S5 to backup body, I also picked up a Nikkor 17-55 2.8. This was a replacement for my trusty old Sigma 28-70 2.8. I'm really loving the Nikkor. Making the move to a wider range has been great. It means working much closer to my subjects, so now they can actually hear my crappy jokes. Also, when working indoors, I'm not having to move half as much furniture to get the shots I want, and that really appeals to my lazy nature. Yes, I read an article, a comment once, by who I think it was a French photographer who said that great photography is 2% creativity and 98% furniture removal. And when you're photographing a wedding, it's really true. You got to, you know, move the couch, move the coffee table. Yeah. So I know what you're talking about, Carl. Back in the good old days of film, I was a Pentax man, but they got left behind by Canon and Nikon so much when digital really took hold. I had to change my system. Obviously, I chose Nikon, aka or brackets Fuji, and for a while I wondered if I'd made the right decision, as Canon seemed to be developing faster. I'm pleased to say now, any doubts I had are long gone. Now, in the great new days of digital, I'm loving my photography again. The D300 is a joy to use and even just a pleasure to hold. Reminds me of when I was a young man finding my way around my... No, I don't think I'll read that scene.
No.
Carl? Yeah. But thanks very much.
Yeah, you had the same reaction I did.
Family show, Carl, please. You know, I'm allowed to get away with that stuff, but not the listeners. And he says, cheers from one of your Palm listeners. Okay, so very nice, Carl, and a lovely image, really lovely image. I'm glad you're loving the D300. Personally, I don't think there's a camera in its class anywhere near that can hold a candle to the D300 at the moment. I really don't. Mind you, there are some new things afoot, Bruce. I'm flying out to Sydney tomorrow, which is
Monday. Yeah.
And I'm just coming up. I'll be there Monday night and Tuesday. There's a Canon launch going on, and they haven't told us what it is, but apparently we're turning up, and we're each going to be thrown a camera and told to have some fun with it. So I'm going to find out what's happening on the dark side on Tuesday morning. And then on Wednesday, I've been invited to a Nikon lunch. They're all coming down here to Melbourne and throwing a lunch for all the journos and stuff like that, and I'm invited.
Wow.
And going to be finding out what's new in the Nikon arena. And there are rumors, of course, anybody who's a Nikon user has been surfing the internet. There are rumors, of course, of a D700 FX, which could be or might not be true. By the time I record the next podcast, I'll know.
So if it's true, what is the rumor?
The rumor is that it's going to be a D300 sort of class or style of body, but with an FX size, which is what Nikon called their 35mm size sensor, an FX size sensor.
Right.
And that would be, in other words, it'd be a D3 without, you know, being a D3. It would have the same characteristics image-wise without maybe some of the, you know, the hard body of the D3 and a few of its other functionalities. But hey, if that's the case, look out, digital world, because having used the D3 and fallen in love with it, you know, it just is an awesome piece of gear. But I must admit, I don't think even I would need all of the features that it has, or even perhaps the nature of its rugged construction. So if there is a camera coming out like that, and I'm absolutely sure there is, I just don't know whether this is the time, then, you know, it will be a killer. It will just take the industry by storm. So, you know, we'll find out what's... And Canon, of course, are launching the day before. And this is... They've always been head-to-head with this. And so we'll just see what's happening. I think it's all very, very interesting. And I need a new camera. I really, really do. So, my D200 is not only a model behind, but it's really starting to show signs of, you know, abuse, which is right. Why I ditch out. So I'll need one sooner or later. But so there's some new things happening. So by the time we record this next one, and hopefully that'll be soon, relatively soon. Between your schedule and mine,
yeah,
consolidated. It'll be confirmed news. So, really terrific. I'll keep you all posted as best I can. And of course, there's a forum at 5 Minute Photographer on that level. So if you are a member of 5 Minute Photographer, I'll be keeping you posted down there too with whatever information that I can possibly get. I'll let you know. If I've got pictures, images, anything, I'll let you know what the new cameras are. But yeah,
fantastic.
Really, really cool. Really cool. Now, what else have we got going on here? Bob sent us some images. I'm entering the National Portrait Competition. Can't make up my mind on which of these two images I should submit. So I can only enter one. Hopefully I'm not too late with this, Bob. But just having a look at it, I don't know. See, judging is a difficult thing. I would tend to go for Kirsten copy.jpg, but a lot depends on what the judges are looking for. So, you know,
I actually, when I wrote back to him, I went the other way.
Did you?
Yeah.
You thought the other image would be cool?
Well, as disconcerting as I found the other image to be, what I said to Bob in the email was that particular image, I can't remember the name of it now, is Baby something or other.
Baby.
That's it. It is at least outside of the norm.
Yeah.
Certainly more so than the portrait of Kirsten. So I, you know, my suggestion was, you know, at least go with something that's a little bit left of center, because, you know, there will be lots of fairly straight portraiture.
Yeah, actually, come to think of it, you're probably right. Yeah, you're probably right. And both the lighting and the composition and the, you know, it's actually a better shot. You're right. It's a better shot.
Okay.
I wasn't trying to sway your
opinion. I was just saying that was my reasoning and the email that I sent back to Bob. So
I'm quite fine. You can sway my opinion. You know, anytime. No problem at all. So that's fine. And then of course there was this email from Michael Ryan, Dublin in Ireland. And sorry, Michael, that was terrible. he says, hi, fellas. Snap, giggle. No, it's not crop, Michael. It's crap. Okay.
Maybe that's crap with an accent.
Yeah, maybe it is. So, okay. Snap, giggle, crap. No, it doesn't work. Currently plowing through the episodes. No, I'm currently plowing through the episodes. Not sure what I did to deserve such a mindless feat. But, hey, I'll take anything I can get to help me to sleep. Thank you, Michael. We love you, too. Episode 65, The Art of Reduction. Sounds a lot like Mick Sang. And, of course, he goes on to discuss what Mick Sang is. At its most basic level, is concerned with uncovering the truth of pure perception. It's episode 65, folks, if you want to know what Michael is talking about. It's basically we see something vivid and penetrating, and in that moment we can express our perception without making anything up. Nothing added, nothing missing. Totally honest about what we see, straight shooting, as we allow ourselves to become more available to the things around us without the biases, filters, and formulas often associated with photography. Our experience and expression of day-to-day moments becomes more rich and endlessly varied beyond what we think. One moment, one shot, graceful appearance. I like the discipline of it and how to see something from nothing. By its very nature, I do not have as many examples, but here are a few musings on the subject with a website link offered there, which is his Flickr site. And in actual fact, I do like the show. Good humored, well informed, relatable, and accents are quaint. Just like an episode of Neighbours. Keep up the good work. One of my good friends is a cast or ex-cast member of Neighbours, Michael. That he got out. He was an ex-cast member. Yeah, so I suppose he agrees with you. But I'm glad to hear that we're quaint, Michael. But you ever considered yourself quaint, Bruce?
Can't say that I have.
No, Michael, thank you, Michael. No, nice to hear you listening over there in Ireland, mate. And thank you very much for your email. And I remember doing that episode a little while ago now, episode 65, because we're on episode 111, so a little while ago now. But I remember doing it, and I'm glad you enjoyed it. It is actually a very good point you make, so thank you very much for that. Let me see. I think we've pretty well caught up, haven't we?
Yeah, I think so.
That about it.
Yep.
And then of course the rest are just emails between us. When are we going to record, Bruce? Yeah. Oh, when I get a chance. When are we going to record, Shelton? Oh, when I get a chance. So,
on that note, Shelton and I have had a discussion over the last couple of days, you know, because obviously, you know, we enjoy doing this show, and obviously you guys must enjoy listening to it, because otherwise you wouldn't keep writing and asking when it's coming back. So what we've tentatively agreed to is that we are going to try and record on a Saturday morning. Now, that's not always going to work, because sometimes Shelton's going to have a wedding to shoot.
Yep.
But would that be fair to say we're going to aim for Saturday mornings?
Oh, look, we'll absolutely do our best.
Yeah.
There's without a doubt we'll do our best to get that done. I miss recording it, and I miss having the interaction.
Yeah.
Of, you know, the listeners and our friends out there in podcast land.
Yep.
So yeah, absolutely. I would certainly love to do that as often as possible. So don't despair, folks. We've just had a little bit of a teething problem with Bruce's new schedule and my very busy schedule. And that's the way life goes.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll do our best. Absolutely do our best. best to, you know, keep this podcast going, and hopefully you'll continue to benefit from it. So, yeah. You know, don't despair. I was inspired to make some, you know, to do this podcast by actually the wedding yesterday to some degree. I photographed a wedding yesterday,
right.
Being Sunday today.
Yep.
And my son Nathan came with me, and he was my VALS, my voice activated light stand.
Yep.
For my off camera flash. He was also my, you know, very able bodied assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great to have him along. And once again, I must admit, we have this mantra here at Shutters Inc. about find the light and put them in it. But yesterday in Melbourne was a fairly grey day, and there were some lovely light opportunities in and around the CBD of Melbourne, where we did most of our actual formal shoot.
For those who don't live in Australia, a fairly grey day in Melbourne is probably 9 out of every 10 days.
Now, I would vehemently disagree with that. But it was a grey day. There was very little shaft of light to work in, but there was some lovely light. I mean, it was really gorgeous. But
yeah.
If I wanted rim lighting or anything like that, then, you know, out of the question with anything natural. But all I did basically yesterday was create the light using off-camera flash. I love the beautiful soft light that we had, but if I wanted to add a little bit more drama, then I needed to, you know, if I needed to do so, and sometimes it was, you know, absolute flash, you know, being the primary light, and then others it was just, you know, using it as an interesting addition to the image. So that's what I really wanted to talk about today, was if we can't find the light and put them in it, you know, and that has been a very popular subject here.
Yep.
Then, you know, flash is a great way, and we have discussed this before, but I just wanted to maybe add to it. Flash is a great way of making the light and, well, putting them in it anywhere you want to. And that's the great thing. While we were out yesterday, I saw awesome locations for photographs, but the light was terrible.
Yeah.
There's a lane in Melbourne where a lot of wedding photographers go. And it's called Hosier Lane. And it's off Flinders Lane in Melbourne. You can Google it, guys, if you want to. But basically, there's just all this colorful graffiti all down the walls of the building of this lane. It's a very popular place for wedding photography, because here in Australia, we have a bit of a different take to wedding photography. We like to do the nice, you know, parks and the nice romantic shots every now and again. But we love nothing more than to get into a graffiti-laden alley with bluestone, you know, bluestone roads and you know, colorful graffiti all over the walls, and, you know, do really dynamic images. And that's what, you know, the bride and groom wanted to do also. So that's where we were, but there was no light in this alleyway, nothing dramatic, nothing colorful, you know, nothing you could really use. So basically it was just a case of finding the light, or rather making the light and putting them in it. And that's where, you know, the off-camera flash was a real help. And first of all, I mean, there's the great thing about off-camera flash is that you can put it anywhere you want to put it. And our last podcast, we dealt with finding the light and putting them in it was, you know, and then, of course, where do you stand yourself? Where do you put yourself in relation to the subject, which is in relation to the light? With flash, if you're using it especially as your primary light source, that is all fairly irrelevant, because you can put your subject anywhere you want to create the photograph, whether there's light there or not. If you're going to make the flash the primary light source, and we'll talk about how to do that in a minute, then you can basically set the shot up how you want it, and then light it accordingly, and make the flash look however you want it to look. For instance, case in point, we were in a back alley, graffiti laden, and there were these kids actually graffitiing at the time. And, you know, they're all in, you know, they're you know, down their homie clothes and all the rest, but, you know, big baggy pants. You know, yes, thank you, America, for that fashion trend. And, you know, they were down there, and the bride wanted her photograph taken leaning against this graffiti wall with these guys spray painting around her, right? And we said, hey, guys, you might be in a photo? And they're all like 15, 16 or whatever. And oh, that'd be great. So she's just leaning against the wall. She's got her arms crossed. She's got a bit of attitude, you know. And they're just spray painting around her. And there was no light. There was just absolutely no light to speak of. Nothing that I could work with. So I just got Nathan, my son, to become my carbon-based voice-activated light stand. And he just stood off where I asked him to. We did a couple of test shots, you know, got low with a wide-angle lens to give it some interesting perspective, got him to fire off the flash, and away we went. Now, I underexposed the scene, one or two stops, can't remember which, manually, and then let the flash take over. Now, the great thing with the Nikon CLS lighting system, you can do this with any lighting system, any off-camera flash, but basically what I did was I set the camera to manual. I underexposed the settings down to one or two stops under, making it immediately apparent to the flash, when the camera talked to the flash, that it had to do all the work. And so it wasn't going to be a fill light source. It now had to basically make up for the fact that the camera thinks that I'm an idiot. You know what I mean? The camera says, oh, this idiot has underexposed, you know, for two stops. Yep. So please, Mr. Flash, can you, you know, make up where he has let you down? And immediately, the moment you do that, you are making the flash the primary light source. It has to do all the work. Now, it wouldn't matter where you were. It wouldn't matter what lighting conditions you were in. If you play with your exposure like that, then your flash is going to make up for it. And you have the decision whether your flash is going to be the primary light source or just a fill light source. And in that regard, I think a lot of people let themselves down with off-camera flash because they don't actually, they maybe stay on program or auto modes and use off-camera flash thinking, well, it'll be this really funky light source. But if you're using a TTL system like the Canon TTL system with the STE2 transmitter or the Nikon Creative Lighting system with, you know, its off-camera flash wireless, you know, TTL metering, the flash is only basically going to do what you tell it to do, and it's only going to act as a fill light source if your exposure in your camera is spot on. The flash doesn't really have to do a lot of work. It just maybe fills in the odd shadow or, you know, does whatever it has to do. But I basically made myself look like an idiot so that the camera would tell the flash, you know, become the primary light source. So I've got these really dramatic photographs of this bride leaning against the wall with this shaft of light coming down the street, hitting her on the side of the face. I got her to turn her face into the flash, which I do often, and her arms crossed. She's looking out of the frame. She doesn't have a lot of looking room, so it creates a bit of visual tension. And then you've got this kid, couple of kids sort of spray painting beside her on the wall. And it's a very dramatic image. I showed it to the groom and he said to me, that looks nothing like what I saw it as. And because he's in the alleyway, he sees the fact that there's very dull lights to speak of other than, you know, this very diffused ambient light that's everywhere without shadow. So he looked at it and he said, wow, that's awesome. How do you do that? And of course, you know, I wasn't going to tell him. But no, I just said, that's because I'm awesome, you know. And it really, if it's a matter of being able to pre-visualize what that flash is going to do. But if you manipulate your exposures accordingly, you can make that flash be as much a part of the image or as little a part of the image in terms of lighting and influence as you want it to be. And we did another technique yesterday with off-camera flash whereby I set the camera on manual, but I wanted some, we were in a fairly well-lit street, Flinders Lane, and there's some beautiful sort of textures of old shop fronts and things down there. So I got this lined up shot of this columned front of a shop with, you know, which has some windows in between, and I set the couple up there. But it was fairly nice light. There were some nice textures, but I just wanted to add a little bit more of a dramatic lighting element to the image. So again, I got my son Nathan to stand off to the side, out of frame, but behind the bride and the groom. And I set the exposure on the camera manual so that it was accurately exposed. But I then got my EV setting.
When you say accurately exposed, for their skin tones or for the...
Absolutely. Yeah. Good question. I metered off the bride's face. So it was accurately metered for her face. And, you know, they were looking at me. It was a bit of a cuddle shot, you know, some actually the groom, of all things, wore a neutral, I think I actually metered off his suit, come to think of it, because he wore a suit that was like a gray card. It was a gray suit. And it was the closest thing to an 18% gray. Nice. I've ever seen. It was just awesome. I said, oh, you know, that's great, James. Thanks for wearing that suit, mate. You're going to make my metering job easy all day, you know. And he said, look, anything I can do to help, mate, you know. That. And so I actually metered off his suit. So there I am. I've got the camera set manual. I metered off his. I've got the 85mm 1.8 on and metered off them. It's all perfect. But then I got my EV setting on the camera, and I took it down to one stop under. So again, what I've done is I've metered the exposure manually, correctly, but I've set my EV setting for one stop under, and then told the flash to fire. So it has come in. No, actually, I set it for one stop over. Forgive me. One stop over.
Right.
So what the camera now is telling the flash is that this photographer wants everything overexposed by one stop. But because I'd already set my shutter speed and my aperture to an accurate exposure, the only thing that the camera could control was the flash. So it controlled the flash and said, well, this photographer wants everything overexposed by a stop. And because Nathan was behind the bride and groom and off to the side just out of frame, it created this beautiful rim lighting effect as if there was the shaft of light coming down the street behind them. So I've got her, you know, particularly rim lit by this shaft of light from the flash that looks very natural and yet was not there to begin with. And so, you know, the more I use these mechanisms, these, you know, methods of working with the combination of flash and camera and understanding how they talk to each other, the more I realize that there is just some great opportunity there for working with the light and really making it, you know, work for you to the degree you want it to in terms of shape and form and texture, lighting dynamics, you know, separating the subject from the background, creating beautiful romantic lighting effects, all those kinds of things. And because, you know, yesterday we started heading for our final destination, which was to shoot down at the beach at about 4:30, something like that. And already it was getting very dark in Melbourne because we're in midwinter here. And the light was just dying on us, you know. And so there was the only thing that I could really do in the alleyways and the streets in which we were taking our photographs was to employ the available light in all its soft beauty with a flash to give myself something to work with in terms of dynamics, to make the image actually really come alive. If I had only relied on the soft light, which was beautiful, I would have had the same kind of shot the whole way. I didn't use flash for every image, but I would have had the same kind of image throughout the whole shoot, which is nice, but particularly diverse.
Yeah.
So that was the great thing about, you know, using the flash. And I had the choice. All I had to do to make the difference was to, because I was metering manually, all I had to do to make a difference in the image as to how much effect the flash had was to go back and forward between under and spot on exposure to, you know, one stop,
right.
Two stops,
yep.
Spot on, one stop, two stops, spot on. And so the background would be less, you know, highlighted in the image or more apparent in the image, depending on where I had set my exposure on the camera in manual. And then, of course, the other dynamic of that was that in each one of those variations, the flash would be more or less obvious in the image, depending on how I had set my exposure manually. So, you know, I suppose one recommendation, one experiment that I'd love everyone to try, if you are doing off-camera flash and you're working with the Canon or the Nikon TTL lighting systems, is to work with your camera manually. Vary your exposure between spot on and under, one, two, three stops, however many you want to do, and see the difference in how that the flash, you know, how apparent it is and what it does to the image. The other thing, of course, is that, as I was saying, you know, in the beginning of this podcast, is that you can put the damn thing anywhere you want. And all I did all day was I asked Nathan to just move. Oh, come here about 3 feet. Would you know? Actually, go back. Okay. And just between shots, between test shots, which is the great thing about digital, right?
Yeah.
Between test shots, I could work out how the flash was falling on Elise's face and get her to move her pose, or just simply get Nathan to move how he, you know, where he was with the flash. And And so I could put my light source anywhere I wanted. I used orange cellophane in a couple of instances. Then I just used the, you know, normal flash itself without any filtration. And then, of course, I used a little sort of a strobist, little homemade device, which is a little box that you put over the front of your flash, which is just containing a whole bunch of black straws, and it becomes like a grid and focuses your flash on a very fine area.
Make them yourself.
Make them yourself out of cardboard and a bunch of black straws.
So it's kind of like having gates around your light.
You put a you make a little cardboard frame that you know, wraps itself around the front of your flash.
Yep.
And you tape it up with gaffer tape so it's the right size. Mm-hmm. And then you fill it up with straws, black straws.
Drinking straws.
Drinking straws, yep. Black straws. You fill that little box up.
Then the light can only travel through the straws.
That's right. So you fill it up half the depth, say, so you've got actually a little bit of cardboard to actually shove over the front of your flash. And the other half is, you know, these black straws, and you cut it all off even at where the little box ends. And you've made yourself a little grid, like a honeycomb grid, which really finely focuses the point of light that you want. And you can just make it, I for the rim lighting shot, I just made it light up the Elise's veil, you know, and hair from behind. On the graffiti shot, I did much the same thing, but just making it light up her face and not the whole scene. So it was, you know, there's all these ways of manipulating the light when you haven't got it, or even if you do, to add another element in there. And there's just not enough time in this podcast to talk about all the variations that you could do. So, you know, and there's a couple more things that we can talk about, but please, if you come to this point of the podcast and you're thinking, I'd really love some ideas, Shelton, really love some ideas, Bruce, please let me know and we can talk about, I'll just make a list of experiments. I'll make a list of potential photographs and a list of potential methods. And next podcast, I'll just enumerate the things that you can get your camera and your flash out to do and try. And then, you know, I can just enumerate them, tell you how to do them. You go out and do them and send us back the pictures or upload them to the Flickr site. And we can really start to play with light, and we can, you know, the ambient light and the flash and the million and one combinations that are available with a working of those two elements alone. Then, of course, what if we not only play with exposure and flash and where you put the flash and how much, you know, influence that flash has and what color the flash has and etc. But what if we now play with the color temperature of the camera and the color temperature of the flash and play, you know, reverse roles with those two? As we've said before, set your camera up on tungsten and put a warming filter over the front of your flash so that everything in your image is cold and blue if you're working outside, except for that which is lit by the flash, which has been overly warmed by the fact that you've got a filter on the front that warms it and thus neutralizes the effect of the tungsten
white balance.
Yeah. So throw all of those things into the pot, and we've got a million and one things that we can suddenly experiment with in terms of making the light and putting them in it, not finding it and putting them in it. But if you then take all those combinations of making the light and putting them in it and finding the light and putting them in it, there is, you know, if you put both those things into the same pot, which is what I was doing yesterday for this wedding, such as the beautiful street light with the rim lighting that I was using with flash because there was no sunlight to speak of, that little pool of toys is endless. So if you are interested, if you're listening to this podcast and you've come to the point whereby you say, hey, Shelton, make a list. Just make a list, and on the next podcast, tell me 10 things that I could do. I'll do it, and I'll give you explicit instructions for each shot. Then go out, find yourself a model, and do the photographs. And we can even have a bit of fun here at Shutters Inc. with, you know, uploading them to the site and having a look at how everybody's gotten onto this. Because I really think there's a lot of potential here, because we've come to this point with our listeners where everybody is saying, "Hey, Shelton, thanks for this mantra of find the light and put him in it." And I see the differences that our listeners are making to their images.
Yep.
When I run my photo workshops, it's like, for me, that has always been a fairly standard thing. I hardly even think about it anymore.
Second nature.
It's second nature. Yeah. Absolutely. I just find the light and put them in it. When I run my workshops, it's becomes this epiphany for people, because where I run my workshops has just beautiful light and we work with it. And I show them what's possible with a window, what's possible with a, you know, shaft of light through a tree, what's possible with a light reflected off a white wall. There's all sorts of things at this location. Let's take that now as a Shutters Inc. community one step further. Seeing as we've all got a handle on that, let's take this a step further and work with the other elements of lighting that we can throw in, which the 21st century has made so possible with just a handheld flash. And it doesn't even need to be through the lens. It could be any old $20 cheap bit of secondhand garbage you've bought down at some junk store, flash that still works, provided you can trigger it with using a, you know, one of those cheap Chinese triggers or a radio popper or a pocket wizard or...
Now, I'm glad you've come to this, because I have a question relating to that.
Absolutely.
My mate Dave, who I record music with, yep. Dave Garner, he's got, admittedly, a very entry-level digital SLR. It's a Pentax IST.
Right.
And he went and bought one of those, you know, cheap third-party remote wireless flash triggering system thingamajiggies. Yep. But what he found with the Pentax IST was that it couldn't be triggered unless the camera's built-in flash was active. Does that sound right to you, or do you think he might have been doing something wrong?
It depends on how he's triggering, but I presume he's triggering using the signal from the hot shoe, because they slip onto the hot shoe of the camera, and they go from there. I'd have to look at with the Pentax, you have to activate the flash so that it actually sends a pulse to the hot shoe. And if not, it sends no pulse. I don't know.
Right.
That's it.
Because I wondered about the same thing with my Konica Minolta 7D. Like, I haven't gone and bought one of those things yet, as much as I would like to. But after Dave told me the experiences he'd had, I sort of shied away from it, because I thought, oh, God, what if it's the same with my 7D?
Yeah.
You know, what if it won't fire the remote unit, you know, unless the on-camera flash is up? You know, that kind of defeats the purpose.
Yep, yep. So he actually has to flip up the flash on his camera in order to trigger.
Yeah.
Well, it sort of defeats the purpose, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because you have that whole frontal lighting that we hate so much here at Shutters Inc.
Unless you stick the gaffer tape right over that, so you don't get that light at all.
You know what where there's a will, there's a relative. You know,
that's
I mean, you'll find a way of overcoming it. I would possibly suggest that he contact you know, the Australian distributors and ask them here, or get on to some Pentax forums and discuss that. And if anybody here at Shutters Inc. wants to, you know, help
chime in, Dave,
please let us know. But yeah, if you actually have to pop up the flash to make your trigger work, and he's got one of those cheap Chinese triggers that you buy off
that he got off eBay,
That's really weird. That's really weird.
So it doesn't sound like something that should be happening, in your opinion.
I wouldn't think so.
Right.
No, I wouldn't think so.
Okay.
No, I don't think that's right at all. But, you know.
I'll have to query him on that and see if he ever got any further with it, and I'll come back to you on it.
Look, if I don't think you'd have a problem with the
7D.
Okay. Except for the fact that you've got that real funky hot shoe.
Yes, but you can get an adapter for that, so that's not a problem.
Right. Well, then, you've got no real issues. I would look, for the sake of $30 or $40, mate, I'd go and buy one and knock yourself out. Or better yet, buy a Nikon and just do CLS, mate. Please.
You know what? I think I said this on a previous podcast. You know, if anything was to ever happen to my camera gear, if it all got stolen again, I think I probably would jump camp.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Mind you, Sony is coming out with some awesome stuff. I mean,
absolutely.
They are really pushing it at the moment, and they're coming out with some incredible stuff. So, don't jump camp just yet. You know, I haven't heard from them in terms of what they'll be doing, you know, flash wise. But I haven't really investigated it.
No.
But, you know, the thing I must admit that I don't like about that system is the real funky hot shoe.
Yeah.
It's the hot shoe is a universal thing in all other cameras. Yep. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. But they've stuck with the old Minolta idea of, you know, this funny, wacky hot shoe thingy. That to me is a bit of a disadvantage.
Well, I guess they're trying to maintain some level of backward compatibility.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's
perhaps
the only way I can interpret that.
Yeah, but then, of course, the old Minolta flashes aren't compatible with the new Sony Digitals, are they? So,
aren't they?
I don't know. Well, probably not TTL, something we can certainly talk about.
Right.
I know that I had a good friend of ours, Nino, who listens to this podcast, and I've known Nino for a long time. He came to one of my workshops, and he has a Sony. And the unfortunate thing was that he came to my creative flash photography workshop.
Right.
And nothing that I had. Now, I brought three or four extra flashes.
Yeah.
I brought three or four Chinese triggers with me. I brought a radio trigger with me. Anything to help just in case. Because I had my system set up to go. Nikon CLS, off you go. Bang, yep. Done. But I knew that others would bring their cameras and their gear and hope that they could learn some off-camera flash. So I brought all this stuff with me, and his was the only camera that I had nothing for because he had this funky hot shoe. And I couldn't do anything for him, so I had to throw him one of my SLRs so he could shoot all day.
Oh, wow.
You know, and it was just such a disadvantage. But, you know, at the same time, great cameras. So, you know, that's the really weird thing about it all.
Hmm.
I only hope that, Sony bring out, I'd love to see them bring out an off-camera flash system. And hey, they may have done so and incorporated it, and I just don't know. I'm not the biggest technical wizard on the planet. I don't go into camera specs all that much because it doesn't interest me, to be quite honest with
right
you. I'm into taking the pictures, not what funky things the cameras do.
Yeah.
Between systems particularly, but I know that it was a disadvantage. But just getting back to our subject, you know, I reckon we've got a lot here to talk about. And if you are perhaps listening to this podcast and thinking, well, I've got a Vivitar 285, or I've got an old Metz 45 CT1, or I've got a, you know, Smith and Wesson whatever flash gun, you know, and I haven't got TTL, you know, CLS or a Canon STE2 transmitter or anything like that, but I really want to do what you're talking about, Shelton. Email us and let me know your particular situation, because if I don't know the situations among our listeners that I'm dealing with, then, you know, I'll speak maybe fairly generically, and you may have a specific need. So we can talk about any flash gun you've got, any system you're working with, and no matter what flash, and this is what I said at the beginning of my creative flash photography workshop, by the end of today, you'll be able to pick up any camera, any flash, and provided one can make the other fire, you'll be able to do anything that we do today, anything that we've done, any technique, you'll be able to do, because it's all about understanding exposure, understanding how the flash works with your ambient exposure, understanding how they talk to one another, and understanding how it turns out in your digital image or on your film. That if you understand the principles, you can pick up a, you know, 1950s rangefinder and a brand new flash gun, and you can do it. You know, you can do it if you understand the principles. So perhaps, maybe we can, because there are a million and one opportunities here, we can talk about the kinds of photographs that you want to take with flash and ambient light. And let's just list step by step, you know, over the next podcast or so, how these kinds of images would be achieved. And we can give you a list, because it's a melting pot of opportunities.
Something that sort of came into my mind while you were talking about that within this podcast was, it'd be really cool if I could give you some homework.
Really?
Yeah.
And that, because
you got nothing to do.
Yeah, sure.
You're one of those arty photographer types. You do nothing all week.
And when I'm not doing nothing all week, I'm watching Oprah Winfrey.
Anyway, what I was thinking was, you know, with something like, you know, you've spoken about the, you know, the artificial sunlight by, you know, shifting the white balance and so on and so forth. It'd be really cool for you to, even if you just went out with Kerry or with Nathan and just took a couple of portraits with them, and, you know, take like a series of shots, one with no flash and then one with normal flash and then one using your you know, your sunshine technique that you, as you refer to it, your sunshine in a pocket or whatever it is.
Yep. Graham Anderson sunshine.
That's the one. So that you can kind of get the, you know, the progression of how it looks at each stage if you, you know, if you were to shoot it with normal flash as opposed to this, you know, altering the white balance and using a filter.
Yep.
Just, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, no, I can do that. We can make it a part of our podcast over the next few weeks.
Sure.
But I'd really love to hear from listeners who've said, look, this sounds really interesting. I've tried this, but I just can't get it to work. Or I'd really love to know how to do this. Can you tell me how? It was interesting because I did this creative flash photography workshop at Montsalvat, and a few podcast listeners were there. And it was very interesting because the understanding of how to balance ambient exposure and flash took a little bit of time for some there to really understand. But once they got it, I was having so much fun watching the little lights go on in their eyes.
I can understand that. I really can.
Yeah, it's just a great feeling. There was a lady there, Sue Ellen, and I hope you're listening, Sue Ellen. I hope we've converted you to Shutters, Inc. And she shoots her share of weddings and has always hated flash. You know, the only thing she's ever been able to really do with it is just fire it off the camera, straight down the barrel, blah, blah, blah. And I said, oh, look, you know, on a wedding, flash can be your absolute lifesaver, as it was for the wedding I did yesterday. And once she'd got the hang of it, because we had two gorgeous models, we had Montsalvat, we had, you know, great textures, and I had a whole bunch of flash guns people could access and use, all on stands and whatnot. They could, you know, I set up a scene, I got the model, I said, here, Soph, stand here, turn this way, we're going to set the flash up over here, folks. Why are we setting the flash up here? Good. Why have I got the model to pose this way with the flash here, etc., etc.? And then, okay, now, everybody, take one shot at 60th of a second at 4.5 or 125th of a second at 4.5, which was the ambient exposure. It was a fairly dull day. 100 ISO, 125th of a second, f4.5. So they all did that. And I said, okay, now go, you know, 1/250th of a second at f4.5 and, you know, and do the same thing. And I, you know, said, okay, you've got exactly the same thing, but what did the, you've taken exactly the same shot, exactly the same situation, the light hasn't changed, but now you see that the flash has played more of a vital role in your image than it did in the other shot, right? Oh, yeah. Okay. Now go another step underexposed. See what happens there. And gradually they could see that, you know, they were making an incredible difference to the impact that the flash had, but also that they could put it anywhere they wanted. I know Sue Ellen particularly loved the idea of this, and little lights were going on and, you know, synaptic pathways were being formed, and it was just a beautiful experience. And it's, you know, in principle, this is not a new thing. This has been around for decades.
Yeah.
But it's just that it's become so easy to do now that you can trigger your flash wirelessly has made this all so fantastic. Because once upon a time, we have to run leads and, you know, all sorts of things to do this. But, you know, there's an old photo. There's a photo of Picasso taken decades ago. And it's an off-camera flash photo of him with a 2 or 3 second exposure, and he's done a work of art in the air with a torch. Oh. And then at the end of the exposure, the flash is fired to reveal him, holding the torch at the end of this piece of artwork. So he's in his dark room. He's just shone a torch and drawn something in the dark, which the camera's picked up. And at the end of the exposure, however many seconds it was, the flash is fired to illuminate him. And so off-camera flash and exposure techniques have been around for decades. But the great thing about it now is that it's so easy and so accessible for all of us to do. And to, you know, so we've got this find the light and put them in it, add to that make the light and put them in it, add to that put those two together in the same pot and see what you come up with, and add to that any other possible combination you can think of to play with the light. And we have no end of variation in what we can do from here on in. And I was just realizing that as I was shooting, well, not just yesterday, but just recently, how much, you know, I probably haven't even begun to tap the opportunities of, you know, of off-camera flash, ambient light, finding the light, making the light. Because admittedly, I'm only working with one flash off-camera at the moment. What if I'm working with two? What if I'm working with three? What if I put different colored gels on those flashes? What if I have them at different distances and exposures? I'm blah, 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 blah. You know, it's just too much fun.
Yeah.
You know? And awesome. Like you don't need, it doesn't need to be expensive gear to do either. It really doesn't.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you very much.
So, what are we looking for now, Bruce? We're looking for some interaction from listeners.
Certainly more emails if you've got things that you want Shelton to cover that we haven't covered yet or that you want us to revisit.
Yes.
Drop us an email, studio@audiotou.com, or you can write to Shelton at shelton@audiotou.com.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget to drop on down to 5 Minute Photographer and check that out.
Absolutely. We've got a really cool situation going on at 5 Minute Photographer. The forum is really alive.
Excellent.
And the great thing about it's really good. It's a really lovely experience. There's a great bunch down there. I've just recently added 2 or 3 new video tutorials. So, on filters in the digital age, understanding exposure and metering. There's a whole bunch more down there as well. So if you haven't joined yet, and you're thinking of it, I'm making it as worthwhile as possible for you.
Fantastic. All right. It's good to be back, people.
Yeah, it is really good to be back. And especially on this subject, if this subject interests you, and I think it's really starting to interest a lot of photographers, and you want to know how and how it's possible to do, I'd really love to hear from you. I really would.
Fantastic. All right. And hopefully, mate, we'll talk again next weekend.
Very soon, I hope.
Good on you. All right. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, mate.
Bye.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Now, how much of that did you understand?
Audio to You delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable. You be the boss. Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear.
Hit us today. And remember, Control D to bookmark. AudioToYou.com.
It's all over, Marge. It's all over.